Can this really be the end? To be stuck inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues again.
Mona, welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Thursday. 251-343-0106. Please, by all means, you want to react to anything you're hearing on the program this morning, shoot me a text. We will, time permitting, respond to best of our abilities. Joining us now, as teased earlier in the program, our good friend of the program, former state senator Rusty Glover. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Jeff. Good to be on the program.
Hey, thanks for taking time to be on. Well, another political season is in full swing, and I just wanted to get your gauge. I mean, you've seen these cycles come and go. It just doesn't seem quite as active as I thought it would be. First congressional district, yeah. The second, not hardly at all.
All right, in the second district, second congressional district, that's where I'm the Sims. That's where this district runs, and it's very quiet. I don't know if I've even seen a sign yet for a candidate. Now, in different parts of Mobile, I've seen a couple signs on the Democrat side, but no Republicans at this time. And I saw one of Dick Brubaker's commercials the other day, and I've seen that once, and that's it. Now, you see a lot of signs and electioneering going on in different parts of the community with our judicial races, county commission, school board, but it's really silent as far as the congressional race.
And I would say this, I mean, with all due respect to the candidates running, and the Republican votes are on your end of the district. They're not in Montgomery, per se. I mean, I'm sure there's a few around Pike Road, but and I'm basing this off of I was looking at a forestry poll when they first polled it very early. The bulk of the Republican votes, or at least those who voted for Trump and Ivy and so on and so forth, are all in the southern part of the 2nd Congressional District.
And I'm not surprised at that, and I also wouldn't be surprised that there was a poll asking voters, even that 12, 15, 20% that actually have been showing up, which race are you going to be voting in, or which district do you live in? And I would imagine 90% would list the candidates in District 1, which they're seeing radio and hearing radio and seeing television commercials. It is really, really quiet.
Well, I would assume that probably dries up after March 5th, but I feel like there's going to be a lot of disappointed people going to the ballot box on March 5th to go vote for Jerry Carl, and that's not going to be the option they're presented with.
There's going to be a lot of scratching of heads when they come out of the voting precinct not seeing his name.
Yeah, so to be continued. Well, let's move on to the matters of the Alabama legislature. And you and I have had discussions about this in the past. The school choice, and I'm not necessarily against it. The people of the state want it. Then let's be deferential to them. But number one, I'm not so sure they want it. And number two, I don't buy into this notion that it's just like one size fits all sweeping cure all for what ails public schools in this state.
Yeah. Just defining what is school choice is troublesome for a lot of people. I mean, if you were to poll people in the Mobile County area, I think a lot of the responses would be concerning the Mobile County Public Schools high schools. They had these academies where students can transfer to other schools based on what they are looking for as far as their profession or trade, and those schools specialize in those certain professions and trades, and that to them, that's school choice. That's what is promoted as by the school board, whereas in other parts of the state it's entirely something totally different. And but again, you know, we passed the accountability plan, you know, several years ago, and I cannot remember, I think I mentioned this last time I was on program, I can't remember anyone saying, Senator Glover, thank you for that, we needed that. there's just, it was just, I think that the happiness and the folks that were pleased the most lived in districts or from school districts outside of our areas. And it was just, you just don't talk about it much. And I was talking yesterday to a secretary, one of the secretaries up in Montgomery, and I asked her, I said, school choice, do you get many calls about school choice? And these big issues, they get a lot of calls about big issues, about things come up, especially a week before the session started. And she says, no, I haven't heard a peep. I've had one person call asking for school choice. And I remember asking her that back during the when the Price Act was up, and she said it was pretty quiet from constituents. Now some of the agencies and special interest groups, they were positioning themselves on the issue, but from the actual people, the constituents, didn't seem to be a lot of care.
Well, that's just the thing. Now I'm sure if you poll it and you present a respondent with the question, do you are pro or anti school choice, it's going to poll pretty well. And that's probably the same with the lottery. It's just when you ask them, how enthusiastic, how much do they think it's a priority? It doesn't really register on the scale.
Right. And I remember watching the hearings. I was watching on my computer, the hearings last year in the Senate on the Price Act. And you had different, speakers coming up and warning that if this were to go into effect, 5,000 to 6,000 teachers would be laid off. That would be pretty traumatic in the public school systems. So much so that it would, I look at some of these bills like the Price Act. It could possibly be like a term limit bill for Republicans only, because right now 12 to 15% of the folks showing up in these Republican primaries, you're going to have, AEA, the school boards, the Superintendents Association, different other groups, they're going to gin up a lot of interest and anger over the effects of this bill coming in, that those who are for it, they're indifferent. They may be going to show up anyway. They may be part of that 12-14%. But you're going to have a mass movement of folks coming to the polls to vote out whoever was responsible for my Aunt Jo or my Uncle Jim getting laid off and these kinds of things happening, or the teachers not getting a pay raise this year. And the propaganda is because this bill was passed. You're going to have a lot of that. And we saw this with the Accountability Act. The Accountability Act was only 0.5% of the budget. And with the propaganda of what it was going to do, it drove out 11 House members, 11 good, solid, conservative Republican House members who had voted on this bill. They were defeated by AEA candidates. And in the Senate, there were three very tight races because of that one vote. That is, as far as money and potential, what they would say the dangers of this act is far more than what the Accountability Act did. 0.5% of the budget's nothing. This would be a major change that would be adversely affecting a lot of people. And if you look around the country, Arizona is touted as a school choice state. $600 million is put into that program. And right now, from what I read, 3.5%, only 3.5% are coming from underserved schools or from below, poverty schools. And it's not exactly doing what people said it was going to do. I got into education many, many years ago because I wanted to help the kids. And I'm like you, I've heard you mention this before on the radio, that there should be some sort of a compensation for parents who are not sending their kids to the public schools, which would cost the taxpayers $7,200, but give them some kind of compensation of appreciation. Even if it's $500 or $1,000, that would be greatly appreciated by those folks. Do it in a tax credit. Then you don't have the ideas of testing the kids and the private schools, that's not going to go over either. But have some sort of a something for those taxpayers, those working hard moms and dads who are paying for their tuition. Give them something. The Accountability Act is still in progress. It's still going on. It's been increased. The funding for that's been increased. So those kids from underserved schools or whatnot, or so-called failing schools, they're getting an opportunity to go and transfer to other schools at this time. But for those who are sacrificing right now, for them to be left out in a potential upcoming bill, I think is that's just not going to go.
Well, the thing I don't like about it, Senator, I hear this kind of sloganeering going on that the zip code shouldn't be indicative of your children's education or whatever. Mm-hmm. And maybe in an ideal world that is true, but let's face it here. Like, what just comes into play, it's people who live in Birmingham city limits and they would like mm-hmm. their child to go to Mountain Brook City Schools. The two are adjacent, where you have like potentially the worst school system in the state and the best school system in the state.
Right.
And they just want to get all the goodies that the taxpayers of Mountain Brook have had to build up over the years. And you're taking when you start blurring those lines and you're trying to mix the haves and the have nots, I mean, I feel like that's a dilution of quality. And that there are winners and losers, and we're not talking about the losers in a school choice system in that sort of way, and it gets lost.
Yeah, and Paul DeMarco, when you had him on there talking about that matter, those are pretty powerful arguments, and I can't see a bill coming out of the legislature that would not take that into consideration. But, you know, back to the impoverished schools, you know, those kids already have the Accountability Act. And I'm not sure if all of them that want, you know, I think all of them that want to get into another school, they're doing it. And Todd Stacey was on your program last Thursday, and he mentioned something I had mentioned a couple times on the program, but I haven't heard it since. And he said that there may be a correlation. I believe there definitely is a correlation with after the Accountability Act went into place, you started to see in the NAEP scores go down. Of course, that's the National Assessment of Education Progress Report. And those numbers were going down in the state of Alabama. There was a direct correlation with taking some of the brightest kids out of those low-performing schools. And when they come out of the system, let's say go to a private school, they're not tested anymore, so they don't show up on the NAEP scores. I thought that was exactly the way things are going. We see a direct correlation between the years that the Accountability Act went into place and the NAEP score started declining. And really, the argument that I've heard, you know, time after time after time, if you start taking those kids, if those kids start making the choice, their parents, to get them out of those schools are going to improve. Well, that doesn't make any kind of sense. You know, the parents aren't going to become more and more involved because Johnny's friend went to a private school. So now I'm going to get involved and I'm going to start attending PTA, PTO meetings. That's just ridiculous. That's never, ever going to happen. And, but that's the argument, that the schools will be better once those kids leave the school, but that doesn't happen.
Senator, kind of running a little low on time here, but I wanted to get you to talk about gambling real quick. Here we are again. It's another new year. And it looks like, and this time the House, to its credit, is taking the lead. But I know you know that those chambers right now, as well as I do, I don't see a path.
Susan DuBose, she said it. I mean, she poses the question, you know, is the increase of sex trafficking and crime, you know, is that a good trade-off for growing government? And I think that anybody that really looks into it, they're not going to say yes, that's a good trade-off. Yesterday I think it was, you were talking about you're mentioning the right to vote. Well, right to vote, we have a republic form of government where you elect members to make those choices for you, and a right to vote, would you be happy with, you know, some that are wanting the right to vote or to vote for a referendum on gambling, would they be okay with a confiscatory tax going through the Alabama legislature, bringing it to the voters? You would have to go to the voters for a for a vote. You know, that would, let's say, triple or quintuple your property taxes. They wouldn't want the legislature to bring that for a vote, especially if they thought that there was a chance it could pass by those who would not be affected. So, you know, we hear this every year. It's going to come up. It's going to come up, and it doesn't. I don't know what to think. You know, it's almost like, like I say, you hear it every year, and it doesn't materialize.
Well, this thing where they say I'm forgiving the people the right to vote, but I'm not personally for gambling is a cop out. It just is. And look, I know you got to change the Constitution of Alabama to get gambling moving and initiated, but I don't think you could separate the two. If you're gonna be for the constitutional amendment vote, then you got to acknowledge some kind of pro gambling tendency there.
Exactly. I've never understood this. I'm not for gambling, but let's have a vote. You know, it's just passing the buck. You know, if they want it, if the people in your district really wanted it, and we're talking about the good, bad, and the ugly of it, they would have elected someone who was more favorable toward, and they don't do that. So, you know, you vote the way you feel, not just passing it along to the voters. I agree.
That and this whole idea that, you know, they're going to try to parade it as a lottery, or especially now they're going to try to parade it as, or just going to fix the law enforcement mechanism. I mean, that is just a small portion of it. This casino gambling is going to change the state forever.
Yeah, I really don't see that have a big bill so you can enforce the illegal gambling laws that we have today. I've never understood why they have to put that in the bill. Just enforce the law. And you know, the lottery, you know, I've heard you say on the program, explain it in detail why you can't have just a lottery coming out of the legislature. And then people continuous say, why can't we have the lottery? They're not listening, or they just pretend like they're not listening. I don't understand that, but it's very clear that a lottery referendum is not coming up. But again, you read the comments on Facebook, social media about state government, and it's just astonishing how little people understand about state government or anything about our form of government.
Well, it's almost like it's intentionally difficult state government, and that's what I guess we're the experts here. Senator, we're way long here, but we got to leave it there. Sure. Thanks for making time for us.
Yes, sir. Anytime. Talk to you soon.
All right. Former state senator Rusty Glover there. Coach Glover, always very kind to come on this program. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Borst Show on FM Talk 106.5.